Some of them hit and some of them miss. Why would you want to develop this?
That's a strange cameo.
I guess it's a creative choice.
Now we're in the middle of a popcorn fight on a mission from God. Will Mark Gruber settle the score? What did she sniff her armpits for? A Star Is Lord.
Hello, listeners. It's me, JR. Welcome back. Or maybe it's your first time. I'm just kidding. It's Mike. Unfortunately, JR was busy, so it's just me doing the intro. This is A Star Is Lorne. It's a movie podcast about the movies of Saturday Night Live. This week we're doing Coneheads with two very funny, very cool dudes, Brent and Corey. They have their own movie podcast called Headcanon. It's about horror movies. Check that out sometime. And without further ado, let's narfle the Garthark!
Coneheads, what? That's what I call on you, Coneheads.
Okay,
we're actually talking about a different movie, though. I guess we're talking about your earliest memory. Did you watch this movie when it first came out, 1993?
I think I did. I must have rented it. Yeah. I bet I rented it. I don't have a specific memory, but I'm sure I picked it up for a couple days.
Anybody see it in the theater?
No, I was 11. I didn't see it in the theater.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw it in the theater, but I feel like it was one of those movies that was always on HBO because my parents somehow had the free HBO hookup, right? So and I feel like it was just one of those movies that was always on that I just saw a bunch of times.
I mean, we could have seen it because amazingly, this is a PG movie. I think it might be one of the only SNL movies that's PG.
Hmm.
And this
I didn't realize
was,
that.
This was after the PG-13 thing, because PG-13 rating started in the 80s. So This very well could have been a PG-13.
I guess that's right. I can't really think of anything. I feel like there's a sex joke in there, but again, it's real high level or like a silhouette or something.
Well, and then until you see Beldar's butt in the shower, his weird, like, crackless ass, right?
Yeah, that's
right.
My kids
were very confused about that one.
Yeah, I guess that doesn't count as nudity, right?
Yeah. And there's no crack, and there's just, like, two weird dots. I wonder how it works, you know?
Those are T.C. Tugger knobs. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's right. He does have little, like, square, they're, like, cylinder knob-like things.
Frankenstein has, like, on his neck, he's got on his butt.
There you go.
Got the ass bolts.
He's got the ass bolts.
So right off the bat, directed by Steve Barron. You ever heard of this guy, Steve Barron?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
So he did a ton of music videos, a lot, like everything from like Eagles to Toto to Madonna, just a ton. Bryan Adams, a ton of Bryan Adams. And
this sounds like Dan Aykroyd somehow picked this guy.
So his movie that he actually did a few movies, and the one that came out before Coneheads, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the first one. Mm.
Nice.
Nice.
There was a Coneheads music video that I saw.
Yeah, I bet he directed that.
Like, you know what? No, we're going with someone else.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, he didn't get the job on the music video, the thing he's known for. His follow-up to Coneheads was a movie that when I looked it up, I can't believe this exists, but I remember it kind of. But Pinocchio with Martin Landau and one of the kids from Home Improvement.
Was it JTT?
JTT.
Yeah, the more
Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
Yeah.
You have the same birthday.
They made that kid in a lab, I heard.
Yeah.
JTT or Pinocchio?
Touche. Touche. I don't remember that, but wow,
I don't remember
that's
that
probably real
either.
Creepy. Yeah, those two together, that's probably real creepy.
A late 90s Pinocchio movie that no one remembers.
Sit on my lap, JTT. That sounds real.
This was, he was coming off of like Lion King fame and probably.
See, that sounds like a story like Corey Feldman would, you know what I mean? He'd be like, you don't even know what was going on with that movie.
Yeah, you don't want to know what. Yeah. And they said cut. They didn't cut. You know what I'm saying?
And I think Landau was just coming off of his Oscar win for Ed Wood. So he was like, you know what? I can do whatever the fuck I want. I have nothing else to prove.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it probably sounded good on paper, you know, as an opportunity. I'm sure it did. It's a classic story. And honestly, when they go to the other land of the like misfit kids or whatever, it's rad, like in the cartoon. I'm sure it's probably, they probably played it down, but if they didn't, there's like, they drink and smoke. They're like gnarly little kids there on the bad. I don't know what it is. Does anyone remember? We're not talking about Pinocchio, obviously, but it's like not the Island of Misfit Toys, but it's like I don't know. It's something like where the liar kids go or something.
Do you remember the big wooden Indian? Like a really tall one with like a huge box of cigars.
Yeah.
And that just like dumping out.
Smoking. Yeah. And all the kids are smoking and drinking, like, come on, we live
playing
with
pool.
Us. Yeah, that's right.
Well, pleasure. Oh, pleasure. I just looked it up. It's Pleasure Island.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, obviously, this director, he liked to work with, people with elongated body parts. Heads and noses and whatever the turtles had.
Shells, I guess.
Did he direct Roxanne by chance?
I don't think so, but yeah.
Thank God that's not a skit.
So the writers, Tom Davis was an SNL writer, and he created it with Dan Aykroyd. He created the whole sketch, and he got to write on the screenplay for the movie as well.
Nice.
And then they brought in a couple of other SNL writers to punch it up. And it was Terry Turner and Bonnie Turner, who are known for Tommy Boy, Wayne's World. They created that 70s show, and they also created Third Rock from the Sun.
Nice.
So they got around. They worked on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, heavy hitters so there.
Yeah, that's really interesting because this came out after Wayne's World or before?
Right after the first Wayne's World, in between.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So Wayne's World's really like, there's not a lot of movies between, there's none between Blues Brothers and Wayne's World, right? And it's a long time in between those.
Yeah, like 20
and I would argue completely different movies and everything after, you know, it's like pre Wayne's World, post Wayne's World life with SNL movies. Like after Mike Myers got involved, that whole, like all the tropes became like, that became the framework really for a lot of movies, not just SNL movies, but all of them going forward. So it's really funny to me because I feel like Aykroyd almost like was like, I want to get back in there, Lorne, you know, Coneheads is old. It was our best sketch. And he like talked him into it. Like, let's make a movie, you know, it feels very Aykroyd driven. I don't know if that's true,
but it's very interesting.
They still pulled in people that wrote on Tommy Boy and Wayne's World to punch it up. And that makes sense because I know all of us can tell what jokes. I mean, Spade's whole character. That's, you know, like, sure, I'll be with the nerdery. We'll go crunch our numbers. Like, there's a lot of those kind of jokes that are in it. Like, when he takes the, immediately takes the control, the guy, like, he's not taking calls right now. Like, that. Those kind of characters, it's really funny. That makes total sense, though. So they brought in the young guys to put in the jokes.
Makes me wonder if, like, all the SNL movies are, like, the Marvel universe. Like, we just never noticed, like, at the end of Blues Brothers is like Garth kind of like stepping out of a car or something.
you had to stay for the post credit scene.
Yeah. There's some theme, isn't there, Mike? Isn't there some theme of like in Blues Brothers, some like restaurant or a movie that's playing? Isn't there some kind of theme that runs through a couple movies?
In John Landis movies.
That's like, what it is.
Almost every John Landis movie has the running gag, "See you next Wednesday."
Mm-hmm.
That has that line. It's a reference to the movie 2001.
Right.
Okay. Huh. I kind of noticed, talking about Aykroyd, I was kind of thinking about a movie, you know, because I love Ghostbusters. I know he did before that, and that I think that was largely Aykroyd driven. And I was kind of, I looked through some of his Blues Brothers, obviously, and I noticed that he seems to always go back to the plot being driven by like mundane bureaucracy, right? Because in this, it's like it's the INS guys or whatever, right?
INS. They're like insurance agents or something that were burnt, or like cops that were burnt, and so they're trying to get INS to get on them. They're like, "We told you they were aliens, and you didn't believe us."
Oh my!
They were like dedicating my life to like calling them out.
They are INS.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought they were like got called out or something, and that's why I thought it was funnier, but.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, and then in Ghostbusters, it's like the EPA guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's actually right, you know? And then in Blues Brothers, it's like their the orphanage they grew up in is like foreclosed on taxes. I don't know. It seems like Aykroyd's like, "Here, what's the plot?" Some like mundane government bureaucracy always seems to be. I don't know. Seems to be his go-to.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny. I never saw any of the skits, the original sketches, and then I watched a few of them today. I didn't get around to all of them, but I watched a few, and it's kind of crazy that there are so many jokes in the movie that are taken straight out of the sketches, even like little subtle things. So you can really tell that the guy who wrote all these sketches, like, he really had a hand in the screenplay. For instance, in one of the sketches, Steve Martin is the host of the episode, and he shows up and he's from the IRS, and he's trying to like figure out their taxes because they don't have social security numbers. And his name in the sketch is Eli Turnbull, which is David Spade's character's name in the movie.
Oh, right. Cool.
Yeah. That's funny. Man. That's cool. And David Spade, this was just such a perfect role for David Spade's like Weasley, smarmy, like
PCU,
yeah,
Tommy Boy, like, yeah, perfect.
Well, I found another similarity between the sketches and the movie. Just to jump off that,
yeah,
when he smokes the whole pack of cigarettes,
that's
in there. There's also the daughter is Connie.
Sketches as well, and they make her more human in the movie.
That's right, and that's something else I wanted to chat about was that. On the immigration theme, they were showing like the Americanization of like the children of immigrants in this country. Like my wife and I shared she had the daughter of one of my students, right? Because I teach adult high school,
mm-hmm.
and this woman she speaks very little English. Sorry, I don't. No Rona. So she's trying to have, the mom is at my wife's school because her son was in trouble, right? Her oldest daughter was the one translating. So like the oldest daughter was still wearing all of like the Muslim garb and knew the language, both languages very, very well. And so the son is like the middle child. And so he's like a little more Americanized. You know, but he's very solemn, very like a stoic. And then suddenly my wife said that like the youngest daughter, who's like a freshman, burst through the door and was like, "Oh man, what'd you do?" But like she's still wearing like the hijab and everything. But like, but it's really showing like it's like as people settle and are in our culture longer and longer, like the children become more and more Americanized. I like that.
Yeah, they pick up that dumb American vernacular.
Well, and I thought it was an interesting choice because, and this isn't the story that it was telling, but I thought it was an interesting choice for them, they were almost immediately accepted by everybody and mm-hmm. celebrated for their differences and what they could do and the fact that Beldar could like fix things really well and they were super useful. And you can tell a different story of around immigration and trying to fit into this culture where you're not as easily accepted and there are hardships there and there, and that's not the story they were telling, but I thought it was an interesting where they were like, hey, welcome to our community, like do the fireworks for this thing, like we want you on this committee, like please fix my lawnmower, you know, you're the best guy I know, you know. I don't know, thought that was interesting.
I mean, he is a white alien.
Right, so. That's true. He is white.
I mean, jumping off of that, we could start with an early scene in the movie where they go to the hotel, and you get the cameo with Michael Richards, and he's like one of the first people to be like, oh, that's fine, they write down some like crazy alien language on the registration.
So crazy,
and he's like, oh, that's fine.
He like wrote like random.
They hieroglyphics and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They pay for the hotel room with quarters that they stole out of the vending machine.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is fine.
Yeah.
And I just think it's funny. Like, you know, he doesn't ask for ID. He doesn't ask for a credit card. I mean, no. I'm going to guess this is a flop house, but still.
because he even mentions, he's like, yes, that is my life mate or whatever. And he's like, sure she is, buddy.
Right. And they're both cone heads, and he still says that. She's with me. Yeah, right.
It just shows like how like oblivious maybe Americans are to like things.
or just the like maybe, you know, working a job like that, you want to like avoid any confrontation with weirdos at all. Like,
right,
a weirdo comes in, wants a room, and you're just like, all right, okay, I don't want to deal with this at all. So
right, but everybody, I feel like they would acknowledge the difference, and like you had little characters like Tom Arnold kind of made fun of him in that weird little cameo where he had like one line. But even like the dentist scene where John Lovitz is like open and he like his whole head just opens and he's got rows of teeth and he's like, yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah, that's all those rows. That's of another teeth. One. Nope. Where people are just like, you know, he asks for his dental records and he gives him some crazy excuse where he chipped his on a viral storm. He chipped his mouth horns or something. And Lovitz is just like, all right, okay. Hey.
Yeah.
Again, is in Subway.
Again, avoiding confrontation. Avoiding confrontation. Like, more questions. I don't want to go deeper into this. The dental work. How much dental work do you think? Do you think they just removed his entire jaw?
Well, it seems like one of those stories that he would be like, "Yeah, everybody likes that scene. I had to sit in a chair for 8 hours at the prosthetic." It seemed like he was probably like, "This is great for the listeners," but he's probably like pushed back on a chair with his head on something, you know, so it's probably like super uncomfortable. It didn't look comfortable even the finished product, but that was one of the memories that stuck out to me from watching it as a kid. I definitely remembered like there's going to be a scene where he opens his mouth and there are a shitload of teeth.
Yeah. And open. That's the perfect casting for that.
Yeah. A lot more cameos than I remembered, for sure.
So many. Oh, yeah. I want to mention another one that's kind of stuck out to me was Adam Sandler in this.
Yeah.
But especially for that point in time, I like that they had him playing like not like a goofy idiot, like who's a blah blah blah. Like they went with a little bit, not that he has a great acting range, but a little bit more like you would see later in his career where he's like, okay, now your name's Donnie DeChico. Okay, now repeat it back to me. You know,
DeChico, nice to meet you.
I thought he was a good like low level criminal that like suited him a lot. It's funny because it actually reminded me more of like his character from Uncut Gems, which was which was fantastic. It shows that like you just give him a role that like he can work with, but he just chooses not to. So whatever.
Right.
So it's
make
like
that money and wear shorts everywhere. Why not?
Yeah. Moving along. Another early scene where this is good for you guys, for the parents, but the scene where she tells him that she's pregnant.
And she's already got like a huge stomach. Like,
she's already.
You are with cone?
Yeah, with cone. Yeah. This is like where he's like shoving junk food down his face and if you notice on the table it's a pile of junk food and a bottle of Clorox. Are they drinking that? Are they drinking bleach?
I think so, because he squirts. At one point, he squirts Windex. Something in there.
Windex, yeah.
Windex his mouth on the pizza, yeah.
I think they take everything really literally, and someone told him, like, that's how you clean things, is with bleach. That's how you clean the pipes. So he's like, oh, okay.
Well, and they seem to have an ability to eat, because at one point she's vacuuming, right?
Yeah, and she's eating.
And this is a great shot, because the camera just, like, pans up the vacuum hose, and it's plugged into her mouth. And
she's
like,
yeah.
And she lets out that awesome cough. For some reason. Yeah. She lets out the awesome cough with, like, where you know, even though it's fake, she had some dirt and shit in her mouth
right.
for that. And, you know, that's, you know, the eating stuff and drinking stuff I loved. Also something that stuck out from when I was a kid that I knew I was going to see again. But that, you were talking earlier, Mike, about the live. I also liked how they did that live. I mean, they took on the opposite trope, which was there's no effects we can use here. We just have to eat and drink or pour a lot of this shit on us or into your mouth in front of everybody. And then he would have a line sometimes after having mouthful of food. In the movie, though, he can open his mouth wide and eat everything and chew it really fast. So it's like almost in a weird way, like those guys getting to see that skit come to life, like what it's all about, right? And Aykroyd was probably, like, other than the Blues Brothers, that was his big skit, the one that got the most views or the most popularity. So it's pretty neat how they were able to use both ways. It just kind of shows the talent. And still make it funny, you know, like you said, throw that bleach in there or throw the Windex in there to make it, you know, also that you're smart. You're not just going to use effects, you know. Yeah, they use effects in a really cool way in this, though, which is, it's really neat that he did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because they went totally different with this movie, with the effects. There's not a lot of futuristic bodysuit stuff. It's prosthetics, claymation, which we'll talk about later, but that's very interesting.
So on my second time watching this, like, it's funny, I pick up on these, like, little details I think are just sort of weird. There's a scene in Sinbad's office where he's like, he's counting up the money, you know, he's like, he's glad that, you know, Beldar is making him all this money. There's a shot of him counting the money on his desk, and he, right there in the middle of all of it is a fucking handgun. So I just thought it was, like, a really funny detail. Like, here's this guy, and obviously he deals in cash, huge stacks of cash, and he's going to have a fucking handgun.
Because, right.
You know, he's the type of shop that's going to get robbed.
Yeah. Well, he even says when he's giving Beldar life advice, right, he gives him, like, three rules to live by or whatever, and one of them is cash only.
Yeah, cash only. Right?
Where's it supposed to be? Do they ever say, like, where is
New Jersey?
New York, New Jersey. Jersey? See, yeah, you're going to have a gun on you back then for sure in Jersey in that shop.
Yeah, that's where the original skit took place, in New Jersey. But okay. One thing in the original skit, they always said that they crashed into Lake Michigan. they didn't do that in the movie. It would be weird, like, you crash in Lake Michigan, but then move to New Jersey.
Right.
You think they would just stay there, right?
Wait, isn't there a lake outside of Jersey? Anyway.
Yeah, it's called the Atlantic Ocean.
Well, I know that, but I feel like there is a lake, like a famous lake outside of Jersey. I could be wrong. It made me think in upstate New York. Let's talk about lakes of Jersey. Welcome to Lakes of Jersey.
Da, 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 the Lakes of Jersey. then we get to meet the INS guys, Michael McKean and David Spade. And the very first time we meet them, Michael McKean is proposing a plan in which to put collars on every Mexican. I'm not quite sure how you're going to do this, and then put, like, a fence underground. And of course, like, this is supposed to be, like, Reagan era.
An electric fence. Yeah.
Yeah, an electric fence. It just shocks them. And I'm sure that this guy, like, he got a job in the Trump administration, I'm sure.
he just couldn't understand why people didn't understand.
Take
advantage of these collars.
I feel like he's Stephen Miller's dad, I think. Or at least his
mentor. But how does he propose to get every Mexican citizen to wear one of these collars?
Yeah.
But what's funny is, like, the second time watching this, I picked up on like a little subtle thing. I'm going to guess that this, I'm sure this was supposed to be in the movies. I mean, it's supposed to be there, but later when they stow away on the car that gets taken back to Remulac, they're wearing collars.
I noticed that at the end of Michael McKean and David Spade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because that proposal is what gets him promoted. Yeah, right? He's going to go from the INS to like some, I don't know if it's a secretary position or something, but I thought it was really clever plot wise that they had Michael McKean and David Spade chasing the Coneheads when they needed them to. And then they had a great reason for them to not be chasing them. Yeah. You know, he's like, oh, I'm promoted now. Like, I don't care, to give him like a little rest in the middle, you know?
He's going to give up on the opportunity of a lifetime, which is catching an alien because he got a promotion.
He saved
their lives too. I mean, it was kind of like a fair deal. Like, I'll take you back home. He's like, fine, I'll take the other two Americans too, or Earthlings too.
I think David Spade gets left behind.
He wants to. He's assistant, right?
No, he says no. The High Master says that he can only take one slave back, and he chooses the highest ranking one.
Yeah. Right, but then David Spade like immediately goes
immediately goes to where
was that thing Spade had in his hand, like the little pole with like the square on it, like
just the note, really
some little thing. It's a Coneheads flag. They're like they wave their little flags during the festival, just like we do. The first of a lot of debuts is Drew Carey. This was his film debut, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just getting in the cab, and he's got one line. So I want to talk about the turban thing, because this is kind of funny to me. It's one of those moments where you think it's like, oh, this is one of those early 90s cringe moments, right? Where you're like, oh, here's a white guy, he's got a turban on, he's driving a cab, right? It's such a trope. But then later when you realize that like his boss is an Indian gentleman and, you know, he wears a turban, you think that, one, the turban covers up the cone, so that's two.
Right.
And then the other one is like, maybe he just thinks this is the outfit of cab drivers.
Right.
Just imitating him, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that's fine. I mean, at least he doesn't do brown face or anything, because
right. Yeah. Although, does he at one point take on like kind of that manner of speaking, like an accent? I'd have to go back and look.
But no, I feel
like
I don't he think phrases so. Some of,
okay. I feel like he phrases some of his sentences in a different way than he does the rest of the movie. Yeah. I'd have to go back and look. Yeah.
I mean, so. You know, that's all fine. The funny, I watched another movie recently, The Memoirs of Invisible Man, Chevy Chase. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene in that where he drives a cab and he wears a turban. And in that one, he does do a brown face. And,
oh, really?
Yeah. It's pretty awful. But,
Hey, Beldar speaks French. Remember when they try to, like, call him out?
Yeah, later, yeah.
Yeah.
There is that part. I'm trying to think. There may be a part.
I don't feel like it's a big thing, but in the cab, I feel like he's like, you know, hello, sir, where are you to be going or something.
Yeah, that's, and just, again, maybe that's like just was his training. Like he thought, I have to act like the guy who trained me and dress like
him. Right, yeah.
That's interesting take, yeah. Plus, I don't know. But it kind of played into the immigrant theme, like for me too. Yeah. But the initial thing, Mike, totally right. Mike and I do a watch party, and initial was cringe for sure, but both movies, surprisingly, we've watched so far, and they're the oldest couple of the oldest ones, not too much cringe, so overall proud of that.
Getting back to the turban thing, what I was gonna say is, even though that seemed to be okay, you know, then a few scenes later when they're staking them out, David Spade is in wearing a turban. And then I'm thinking, why? Why is that? Like, why did he have to do that part? It's like, you just barely escaped, like, cringe from it. And now you're bringing it back.
Right. That's funny. I didn't even notice that. That's funny.
INS agent wearing a turban like that.
Okay. Oh, wow. I guess you could play it up to being like, yeah, it's an INS agent. He's an asshole. So, yeah.
But that's even worse, I feel like.
Okay, the umbilical cord scene. Any of you guys bite the umbilical cord of any of your children?
No. I did not. I thought about it, but no, I just cut it.
Yeah.
With
right scissors. Before that, my wife was in the room watching the movie. She had never seen it before. And when her water breaks,
oh
yeah,
just like floods their apartment.
Yeah.
I get the best. My wife is just like, what the fuck?
Super good practical effects.
It's Are we like allowed awesome. To say bad words?
Fuck yeah, man.
Okay. Yeah, who cares? Yeah. Okay. So
I'm sorry. But then that pregnancy scene, like his coworker from the taxi cab place.
Oh, yeah.
And also Sinbad.
And Sinbad. Back, there, yeah.
And it's like everyone he knows is in the room for the birth taking pictures.
They're like using like a restaurant ketchup bottle thingy, like to spray like liquid. Like,
yeah. After. They're getting on that. Sinbad is like, I mean, they like freaking out because they're just like covered in alien goo. Yeah. Alien afterbirth goo.
Oh, God. It's my favorite death metal band.
Alien afterbirth.
Oh, man. It's funny.
There's already a microbrewery that.
Oh, man. It's funny you said that, J.R., because actually in my notes I had, they keep saying the phrase blunt skulls.
Yeah.
Like, is that blunt skulls with a Z? And is that like a. Is that like a marijuana rolling paper company, or is that maybe like a rat?
It should be.
That would be a good
like
one.
Some kind of sunglasses, like bro glasses.
Blunt skulls. Blunt skulls. Yeah.
I love that. I love that nickname that they call them, the blunt skulls. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Pretty exactly.
Why did they call the INS people nits? What are they?
Mebs. I think Mebs is Mebs. Just a curse word.
I think it's like shit or damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Derogatory it's some kind of derogatory because they call people that or it's some. Yeah, I think we said at one point we thought it was shit, but then another point it was, it's almost like the curse word aloha or something.
Yeah, I think it's like as versatile as fuck. You know, they're like, Mebs.
That's true. Fuck's pretty good.
Flare and depth.
Oh my God! Yeah, did we write any of those down?
I find you unacceptable.
Yeah, I did.
There were some that were so good. Oh my good Lord! I can't wait to hear those.
So there's like Flarthrag and Flarendip.
Yeah,
which are
you can't trust the freaking woman of the streets of Flarthrag.
Flarthrag. So those are punk bands back on Remulac. The Flarthrag, yeah, exactly. Absolute Depths.
Black Flarthrag. That's right. Yeah, Black Flarthrag. Yeah, I remember now. Hell yeah.
All right, so middle of the movie. Now we got like the Paul Simon song. Which, you know, every time I hear this song, it makes me think of this montage. And who's shooting this footage? Because it seems like the whole family is in every.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's right.
There's even the scene where he uses the electricity of the cone to open the garage door, and someone's filming that, right?
That's right. Yeah.
That's funny. you mentioned, I'm sorry, I've thought about this when you mentioned this being Drew Carey's first movie. I think this is the daughter's first movie too.
She was in Major League right before this.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's
early for her. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought she did
Ellen
great.
DeGeneres?
Ellen DeGeneres, this is her debut as well.
Yeah.
Nice.
You barely even like kind of notices her because the camera never focuses on her.
Yeah.
She never gets any like FaceTime and she only has like a couple of lines. But yeah, it's her first.
I didn't notice that when I watched it, but I saw her name in the credits and I went back to that scene and just listened to her voice. And I was like, oh yeah, that's Dory. Like that's totally like it's when you know it's her, it's like obviously her voice, you know.
So in the footage, the 3-year-old daughter is actually Dan Aykroyd's daughter. It's Danielle.
Okay, nice.
I mean, it's kind of funny because my wife's name is Danielle and her dad is named Daniel. So I don't know. I just thought it's funny. I think it's funny when Dan's name their daughter's Danielle.
Right. Kind of like, I don't know. This just made me think of like Jada Pinkett and Will Smith, how they name their kids like versions of their own names, you know?
Oh yeah.
Willow
and Jaden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there maybe another one? I don't know.
Oh, shit, my mind is blown. I just put that together. I didn't realize that.
Okay, so he's a driving instructor. This is another thing from the the original sketch, like the very first sketch, he mentions that he's a driving instructor. The very first sketch too, Ronnie shows up and he's a mechanic. He shows up to pick up their daughter. It's Bill Murray.
Okay.
So Ronnie's there from the beginning. That was like an original idea, him being a mechanic. I think so. So yeah, that's another that I think that it was like probably the biggest cringe thing for me in the movie is like,
in the car with Ronnie.
Well, that for sure. But just sure, but that the just, overall yeah. the overall thing, maybe 17, 18 year old daughter. Obviously, the actress isn't 17 or 18.
You're being generous, but like but she's probably sex. More like 15, 16 than well, supposed maybe, to be, right?
I don't know. She's in high school.
Yeah.
Chris Farley, let's say he's 25, 26, 27-year-old mechanic. And
see, I was giving him the benefit of the doubt and just assuming they were pretty close in age. That's what I automatically assumed.
It's weird to try to fuck a customer's like little girl.
It is possible that they're playing him as like maybe a high school dropout. I mean, he is a caddy too, and usually like 25-year-olds aren't caddies. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, professionally,
yeah, he is a caddy too. He's okay. So let's talk about Ronnie for a minute. Of course, Chris Farley, love him. Not going to get any arguments on this podcast here, but. Also didn't remember all these scenes with him, did not remember he had such a big part, totally forgot he was the caddy and all that. Also that he ended up being like the hero for them. Like he starts off as the creep, it's like stands up to the dad and he's like, what's up? And then he ends up being this creep and then he truly asks for her forgiveness. Then he proves himself later and is this hero actually. Nah. And I was stoked that he had so much, you know, and that's probably why they tried to put Tommy Boy together. They're like, look at these guys that punched this up. And maybe they're the ones that put all, it seems to me that they're the ones that probably put some of that funny stuff in there. Like, let Spade and Farley play a little bit and you'll be happy. And then, you know, we probably got Tommy Boy out of that, which is, I don't know. Ronnie was great. Like I said, I loved it. But for me as a kid, I had the mouth scene. I knew I was going to see the claymation. I knew I was going to see the eating scene and a few of the other things. But Ronnie's scene to me in my head from my childhood was just the roof in the car, ripping the roof.
Yeah.
And that RHCP song is his like theme. Every time they show him, they like play the song again. And that's pretty great. That he has like a theme, Ronnie's theme.
I had a ghost memory where I thought he did something, but he didn't in the movie. It's where like, it's when after she kisses him, and it's this like amazing magical kiss, like endorphins, and like he starts to try to kiss her. For some reason, I thought like he tried to go down on her cone.
But he fondles it, right? He goes straight for her cone, though.
Yeah. What's it called when there's a like the Berenstain Bears thing, a Mandela
Mandela effect?
Yeah,
Mandela effect. Yeah, that's Brent. You're from an alternate reality that diverged, and where he does go down.
He puts his mouth on her cone like a jeweler fits a ring. Like a molten ring on a pole.
My daughter's not in it. Not a flarthrag, sir.
Speaking of the vacuum scene, this is the first time I realized the juxtaposition there, where she like gives him this kiss and she basically like just sucks all of the air. She's like, and then the very next scene, it shows the mom using her suck action to do the vacuuming.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And I never actually put those two scenes together like that before.
And then it's such a shame that like the way they have sex is sensor rings.
Right.
Yeah.
What a waste.
Well, I mean,
that reminded me, Brent, and I know Brent and I know that we both love Demolition Man. That reminded me of the scene with where Sylvester Stallone and Sandra Bullock try to like have that VR sex, and he doesn't do it. He doesn't like it. And Brent and I remember we talked about this before. We're like, well, you get a chance to have like future VR sex, like you do that. Don't
yeah,
complain.
At least try it out.
We both put sunglasses on and jerk each other off. Remember that?
Yeah. There's worse things. There's worse things on a blind date. I mean, that's kind of getting to some sort of base. Like, at least try it out first.
Yeah.
I love how grossed out she is about him wanting to, like, actually touch her, though. That's my favorite part of that scene. She's like, you, like, touch me?
yeah, that's
like, getting too far. That's all we do. Too far from there.
Him getting handsy, it's a little weird. Like, just the line that he says where she's like, I'm not ready. He's like, oh, you're ready. It's just sort of like, so creepy. Yeah.
Gotta get my sensory ring.
But, then he comes out, the dad, like, rips the roof. And then later on the golf course, he has, like, one of my favorite lines where he was like, I hope you didn't cut your hand ripping open my car.
Yeah. That scene, because there's also, like, the first line he says, and I'm just trying to imagine a person, like, as a caddy, going up to this girl you're kind of dating, going up to her dad, and like, Mr. Conehead, I'm miserable.
Just miserable without your daughter. I need your daughter.
A couple other things from the original sketch. She puts the decal on her cone. Remember? That's original sketch thing. The astronauts to the moon joke, where they're like, Tang, it's the astronauts to the moon. They're like, astronauts to the moon. their neighbors are the Farbers, and that's another sketch where it's like Coneheads meet the Farbers, and the Farbers were like, it was like Belushi and Gilda
played. And I saw that one, and that one was really good. There's a lot of that real fun, like Martian talk in English thing where they describe stuff. Yeah. And at the end, Beldar does this most amazing, like a common SNL thing is where people crash to jump through a window.
Yes.
He like torpedoes through this thing and makes like Belushi break a little bit. And it was really cool looking. The whole family jumps out the window. It was good.
We got another screen debut cameo for Joey Warren Adams.
Oh, yes.
And Parker Posey is the other.
Parker Posey, that's right.
So
it's not Parker's debut. She was in a couple of things, but they really weren't known at the time.
I did love both of them so much.
Yeah, those were other roles where I didn't notice until I saw their names in the credits, and I had to go back. Yeah. And I was like, it doesn't even show their faces.
Yeah,
hardly at all. You know,
get on their faces. Yeah.
Who's the Joey person?
Joey Lauren Adams
from Chasing Amy. The main Amy from Kevin Chasing Smith Amy. She's in a lot. She's in Mallrats too. She's in a lot of Kevin Smith.
She's in Dazed and Confused with
perfect
with the daughter. Yeah.
I just don't remember her in the Coneheads movie.
She's one of the daughters. The daughter goes to the
one of the friends.
When they meet Ronnie, they go to the mechanic, the garage, and she's got her two friends with her, and it's Parker and Joey.
Yeah. Her two friends that jump in the car. And I've had this experience like with my daughter in the car with friends where you're just like driving and they're all in the back like, oh my god, I love this song. She's like, turns the radio up.
I was just about to ask, like, are you guys looking forward to doing this with your teenage daughters and their friends just carrying all of their bags for them?
Hey man, if I see a mechanic mechanic like meets me on the golf course and's like, I need your daughter, I'm gonna be like, fucking kill you, buddy.
I think it would probably be at the tech store, right? And nowadays you're going in the tech store because you need to get your iPhone fixed.
Right.
I hope you didn't cut your hand when you smashed my iPhone on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Back when this guy's like sending your daughter like pictures of his like non-abs.
Right.
Abs, TikTok's abs. After 9.
That's another thing too. So this has to be just like movie logic, or maybe it's like alien logic or something. But 17 years pass. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, like McKean's been at his job for 17 years and they're just now getting on to him about like this job that he walked away from.
Right. That's true.
I think is it just because the Coneheads like maybe they grow up like really fast? Maybe 5 years is actually like 17 years to them or something.
Oh, that's the thing. I wondered about that. Yeah. Because I don't know how fast Connie ages.
Yeah.
Because they said it was 7 Zurls, and I was trying to figure out how long a Zurl is. But, I didn't feel like I could take her age as any indicator because I figured she probably didn't age. Yeah, so I don't know timeline wise. I'm not sure.
7-0s, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe that helps, like the whole Ronnie.
7-0s is like 4 score minus 3 parsecs, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know he says he's going to ground her for a whole zerl. So I know one zerl is a long time. I don't know if it equates.
Maybe it's a year. They just, I mean, she grows fast in the womb.
When yeah. when he finally gets her to go out on a date with him, and he takes her to Subway. I mean, it's a great date. Right. They how many footlongs do they order? Because she like slams one.
Yeah.
And then he's eating one. And then there's another one. She says, "Are you going to eat that?" And he says, "Oh,
yeah."
Did they order 3-foot-long sandwiches? I mean,
apparently.
Seems light.
Yeah.
For Conan.
That's the only time where you actually get you can see some like cartoon animation because it's like a cartoon
sandwich
into her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
What other cameos?
Oh, looked like Space Jam when she ate that sandwich.
Yeah. I have never seen Space Jam.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
I know, and that new one's coming out, and the pressure's on now.
So you have to complete.
Clock's ticking.
You know how like
get the criteria and wide, get the widescreen. Like,
do you remember when
Director Scott?
Oh, sorry, it's Wayne's World when Garth is like, you remember when Bugs Bunny dressed up as a girl bunny?
Yeah.
Sure.
In Space Jam, the girl bunny is literally fire. She is like the hottest cartoon bunny you'll ever see.
Yeah, there's a big big controversy about that, right?
Yeah.
Girl bunny.
People on the internet are mad. She's apparently not as hot as she used to be, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, really? Is that the thing? Okay.
Oh, yeah. People are all mad about it.
It doesn't matter. I'm glad that you haven't heard of that, Brent. I wish that I hadn't heard of that.
You just have to watch the old Space Jam to jerk off, I guess.
Right.
The daughter, she cries green tears.
Yeah.
I noticed that too because the bedspread was all green.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Tom Arnold. When I'm looking through my notes, Julia Sweeney.
Oh yeah.
She gets him to do the homecoming fireworks thing.
Yeah.
I love it.
Go ahead. I was just gonna say it kind of reminded me. I don't think he actually did, but I almost feel like maybe Peter Jackson saw that scene and then like kind of stole the idea for Lord of the Rings, right? When Gandalf has the dragon fireworks, you know.
Well, my favorite line in the whole movie is like the fire marshal who's there when he initially lights it with his cigar and just goes pew, and he's like kind of lame, Conehead.
And he just puts his sunglasses on.
The shield.
Just wait.
Like little interesting thing about that guy, I looked him up. Like he's a big stunt coordinator. He's been like a stunt coordinator since the 70s.
Oh, nice.
He did some
name like Blade or Chief or something.
It should be right. I think it's Wobbly or something like that.
Steel. Last name's Steel for sure.
His name's Blaze Blunt Skull.
Blaze Blunt Skull. Yeah.
There's that next scene though, where that brings you to the Parzat. What's the mom's name?
Primat.
Sorry, to the grocery store in the next one. And Julia Sweeney has that bit where she's like, "Sorry, we're not going to let him."
The sunburn. Yeah. So here's one of back at the fireworks. Here's one of your classic like, it's not the fireworks. It was at the diving. The dive match where Farley is there and he does one of his classic like slaps his head.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm just a jerk.
Stupid.
Like smack. And this is when I realized too that except for the very last scene of the movie, he is always in his work jacket.
Yeah.
He is always in his fucking jacket. He never takes it off.
Ronnie's a committed guy, man. He's committed to his job. He's committed to his girl. If he doesn't have those things, he's miserable.
That jacket has got to stink. It's got a smell. It's like covered in oil.
Yeah, subway dropping.
And somehow he's able to like, he's able to get this like this young attractive girl to go out with him. It's because it's just Farley. He's got that Farley charm, right?
Right.
He even at one point in the at the mechanic where she's like, "How come you couldn't get this car fixed in time?" He's like, "Maybe because I was out back finishing a beer." It's like, "Oh, so you, so you drink on the job? What a charmer!"
Right.
It's just, it's that movie. It's that movie logic, you know, that it's just. Yeah.
Well, and I love in that. Speaking of the mechanic scene, I love that she doesn't speak like her parents do. Like, she's obviously, you know, acclimated to her life here, you know, in the United States. But I like when little bits peek through, like when she's like, you know, tell me, how hard can it be to do an alignment on a standard stand yeah. with standard rack and pinion?
Rack and pinion, you
know,
yeah.
Yeah, like, and like, just Nick calls the whole thing out, and you know that's because, you know, of who her parents are and where she comes from, you know?
Good example. I love that.
Okay. Oh yeah. So the locker room scene that was coming up next.
Oh yeah.
The no ass crack, the nubs. I wrote down, what's that dick look like?
I imagine my guess, I don't know, maybe we can all take bets here. My guess is it's like a duck's corkscrew style, right? That's my guess. Corkscrew.
Should we go around and I'll make a guess? My guess is, you know, that when he in the hotel scene, when he wrote down his like his check-in card, it looks like that rolled up, but like on the outside are all like the hieroglyphics.
Are those tattoos? Are those tattoos, or are they spots that grow there?
So you know, like when you get a pet, and like, as it grows up, like it's got its spots, and its spots are it's genetics. So like my dog has like a partial black part
right.
of
its head. Oh, and maybe brown. And maybe everyone is unique, like fingerprints.
Exactly. Right? So that's how they test you in Remulac. They say, take out your member.
Remove your reproductive coil.
Yeah. See, that's what I think. I think it's probably less funny or cool. It's probably there's just nothing down there, and they have to use those rings, and that's it. It's like kind of like a bummer. But they don't care. They don't care because they don't. Maybe that's what they use the nubs for. They're like,
because if you look closely in that scene, as he's going into the shower, the guys coming out are the ones looking down, and their faces are like, "What is going on?" So that's why I'm wondering. You know, I'm going to say that it looks the exact same on the back as in the front. Yeah, I'm going to say there's nothing there with like two nubs.
Two nubs. Yeah. Okay. That could be kind of like birds, right? Because all birds just have a cloaca, right? Yeah. So they just kind of like bang the holes together. So,
oh really?
Cool. Hole banging.
You just gotta bump the nubs together, you know.
You just blunt sculling. Just pick that up on the microphone.
I like when Primate's trying to like spark the marriage back, right? She's trying to, and so they're role playing as humans. I thought that was kind of funny.
Which
makes me think, is there role playing as aliens? Is that a thing? Is that gonna it's like Furbies, only it's like aliens, right?
Do you mean furries?
What?
You mean furries?
Furries. I said furries.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, Furbies is a thing too.
Wait, can I guess? Furbies is when you dress up like at the animatronic things in Chuck E. Cheese.
Furbies is when you make your eyeballs bulge out of your head and you just like, you touch eyeballs.
That sounds so unpleasant.
My wife and I like to role play like we're in conspiracy, like real bad conspiracy, like we're in QAnon or something. And it like just turns us on really bad. She's like she'll be like adrenochrome. I'm like, shh.
You like tell. Let me lay you down on this flat earth.
Yes, exactly.
This is totally unrelated. But have you seen the movie Four Christmases with Vince Vaughn?
Yes, I have. Yeah,
I actually kind of like that movie.
It's pretty funny. I gotta say, it's pretty funny for a standard like holiday romantic comedy. It's pretty funny, but we're talking about a different movie. Sorry,
I think it's okay. This is not a
that's podcast. A great movie.
Yeah.
Are there ass crackless asses with nubs in that as well?
Ooh.
No. There's a beginning when we meet the main characters in Four Christmases. It's they're. You find out later they've actually been married for a long time, and they're role playing meeting each other for the first time. So,
oh,
it's a good scene though. It's well done.
Spoiler, bro.
That might be on Netflix. Like right now, I'll check that out. I'll check that scene out.
It's so fun. And John Favreau has one of my favorite parts.
He's my favorite character
in that movie. Yeah, John Favreau and Katie Nixon.
The redneck family, just because of where I come from, like the redneck family scene with like Tim McGraw, isn't it? Like Tim McGraw and John Favreau, that's just so perfect.
They're so good.
Like, you gonna buy something nice for my kid and make me look bad? Like that. Yeah. It's just like, oh man. Anyway.
Yeah. next thing I wrote down is skipping over the whole. Let's see. Oh no, I'm not skipping over anything. So they're at the party, the costume party. There's that magic carpet rag cover, right?
Yeah.
Did we find out who did that? Was that Dishwalla?
That was my guess. No, we did find out who it was.
It's like Slash. Slash and somebody.
Yeah, it was Slash and a guy is what really? It's credited as. Yeah. Somebody wanted tickets. Slashing it was in Wayne's World too, as well. I feel like it's like the same writers and actors are all over these things, you know.
So this is right after they get the call that they can come home now, and he goes to tell the daughter, right, and she was like, "I'm in love with Ronnie," and this is like the best response ever when he does the like, oh, it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie, his just despair has just filled him that she is in love with this fucking cretin.
Yeah.
isn't something happening when she gets the call? And they're just like the INS guys
come over.
Yeah.
They're like, Jehovah's Witnesses. The fuck
out. Or God, like, they just like push them. They're like, not even. Yeah. We're out of here.
This is like straight out of the original sketches too. Is like when they have visitors over, instead of bringing them like a single soft drink, they bring them a six pack each.
Yeah. Yeah, and a bag of chips.
Yeah, and then each one gets a bag of chips. Yeah. So then then Ronnie and the daughter, they go home and they're doing the sensor rings and they come home and catch him. And this is weird. It's kind of the equivalent of like, you know, catching your kids like banging in the living room.
Yeah.
That's yikes.
Yeah.
So then they have to escape, and this is when I realized that they're living in a cul-de-sac. Now, if you're someone who is going to maybe constantly be on the run, don't live in a cul-de-sac.
Right. That's good advice.
Cul-de-sacs for people who've got nothing to fear.
Right.
Isn't it true that like more people die in a cul-de-sac than like a normal street?
Oh, yeah.
That statistic.
Yeah.
Like, people think that it's more safe.
I don't know.
It's like the positioning of the houses runs over.
I was gonna say it's some like geographic anomaly because you could get more houses per square feet.
Oh right. Oh, that makes sense.
yeah, and I mean cul-de-sac, it's a highbrow word for dead end, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, it sounds better.
Is it French? Is that a French?
I'm pretty sure it's French.
Making that up?
Yeah, it's French. It's like French for like no way out or something.
to call something means to kill, right? So you kill the sack.
Kill the sack.
Your sack. Yeah.
The ship shows up, right? Tons of witnesses. So aliens exist now, right? There's no way of covering that up. Unless somehow like you're gonna black bag and they're definitely black bagging Ronnie because the cops
right. Are, yeah.
They're black bagging they're dropping him down a hole. No one will ever find him again, right? they're taking all these guys to some CIA black site.
All right.
Wiping their brains.
Yeah, she runs into Ronnie the next week after they get back. She's like, hey, Ronnie. And he's like, I don't know you.
Yeah, he's like, psh, get out of here, kid. Yeah, finish this beer.
Oh, yeah. Weird. You're right.
I'm miserable. I'm miserable, and I don't know why.
Very good.
You get the Garrett Morris cameo. He's the he's the pilot. He's original. He was original Conehead.
Nice. Phil Hartman and Dave Thomas. Those are a couple of my favorite. I think they're great. Yeah.
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 They're great.
And Dave Thomas is SCTV, I think, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually just started like rewatching some of those.
How are they? They're pretty good.
They're okay. The first season is like, you know, they're still trying to get it together. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's all right. I'm watching them on YouTube. So, I mean, the quality's not great, but yeah. All right. The John Candy character of like he's supposed to be the fitness guy, but he just like eats and smokes all the time, and he's like always like holding his chest. It's like it's really sort of dark to see him doing that character. And I've been like, that's how you die, dude.
Right. Yeah. Loses some of the humor there.
I had a Second City book, like an encyclopedia, which I don't know where it is now, but in it was like a CD. And in that CD was Farley doing his van, living in a van down by the river sketch.
Okay.
Matt Foley.
So he took that. And it was kind of one of those things that like went over from SNL to, I'm sorry, from Second City to SNL. So
Odenkirk wrote that, I think.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote that skit. He created that character.
Yeah. We were joking with some guys one night about AMC picking up like Odenkirk writing it again and like AMC picking it up and being like writing like a whole dark storyline, like Matt loses his family, ends up having to live in this van, and it's like this Saturday, you're gonna find out who's been in your basement. You know? It's like...
I remember we were talking about that, like had Farley like lived like that would have been some AMC show like produced by Odenkirk, or maybe even he directed
it's been the called pilot. Foley. Just been
yeah,
called
just,
Foley.
It just called Foley. Yeah. Foley.
Oh man. That would be interesting to see what Farley would have done. Because I would imagine at some point he would, I mean, not well, all they of them said, did, I guess, but would want to take a more serious role at some point, you know.
Shrek for sure, they know he was gonna do Shrek. They also know he was gonna do Buddy Hackett movie.
Ooh, that would be good.
Those both would have been Shrek would have been a lot better with him as Shrek. I mean, Shrek's fine with Mike, but I think it was written for Farley, so it probably would have been better. And Buddy Hackett, I don't know, it would have been could have been Chaplin, or it could have been, you know, it's
right.
There's not many good movies like that. They usually fall short some way. I feel like the Queen movie was pretty good, still fell short. I hate that. It's not a popular opinion, but still fell short a little bit. I mean, because Queen is Queen. You can't play Queen. Like,
Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like...
I like it.
When Jim Carrey did Man on the Moon, I feel like that was a moment where everybody was like, oh, dude, you know, dude can act, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good one.
Yeah, I have this whole thing about biopics where it's like, I appreciate them, I like them, but when it comes to, like, people getting all these accolades and awards, I just feel like they're just being praised for doing an impression.
Yeah,
right.
I know, right? Like people, I mean, Rami Malek was great as you know, as Freddie Mercury. But think like, say he was like up against like Bradley Cooper for his role in, you know, A Star Is Born, where obviously people are going to like Rami Malek because they have something to compare him to. They can't really compare Bradley Cooper's character to someone because he's not imitating anyone.
Well, but hasn't that movie been done like three other times?
Yes, it's been done like four times. Yeah,
and it swept the Oscars every time, right?
Oh, like, wow. Except for the new one.
Yeah.
Oh,
wait, didn't Bradley Cooper's? It was nominated for a bunch. Did it not win much?
I don't think it won anything, actually.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, this was the only version not to sweep. Yeah, I think the very like. But anyway, The Star Is Born. That's not an SNL movie. Fuck that shit.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So, Oh yeah. So here's something I wrote down. So they get to Remulac, right? And it's supposed to be this advanced civilization. They have like intergalactic travel, and all this other cool stuff, right? But it's like a dictatorship,
right? Right.
It's a monarchy or something like that, right?
Right.
And I don't know, like my political brain just immediately was like, yeah, the dictatorship isn't going to be advanced. Are you kidding me? You can't get interstellar travel under these conditions.
Right. Well, and it seemed like, I mean, the fact that the whole, and their whole society seemed to be conquest based, and their whole goal was like to enslave, but nothing about them as a physical species or their behavior suggested like a species that would go conquer the galaxy, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, or that their evolutionary traits or whatever led to that type of behavior or that type of path, right? Like, why do you have a cone head for the sensory ring? Is that it? The teeth, is that to fly? You know, yeah, good call. Yeah.
It seems like there was more set up for like mom and dad save the world or something like that. Remember that, which is a John Lovitz movie. And plays Todd Spengler, and it's like this other like dictatorship with advanced technology.
Yeah,
it's much more goofy. It's a terrible movie.
Yeah, it's another.
I like it.
It's another civilization that like they've somehow been able to like to travel through like Einstein-Rosenberg bridges, right? But it's a civilization of idiots.
Yeah, like the whole trope that was like one of my favorite scenes of the movie when he like wins him over with the bubble gum, with the condom gum.
The condom, which, yeah, we
which by here. The way, second weird condom joke in the second movie in a row we've watched. Yeah. That would be sweet if there's a weird condom theme in every one of them. Yeah. I don't think
what was
there
it?
Is.
What did you guys watch? Wayne's what? World first? Was that the first one you guys watched?
No, we've only watched Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers. Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
So the two things I remember is I thought they were on Remulac longer. But when I got to that part of the movie, I was like, damn, there's only like 10 minutes left or 20 minutes left. But also that whole trope where you're talking about them being idiots, where it was like he won them over with the condom gum, but then immediately still he was just like, nah, kill him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I like that the punishment, it seems like the punishment, no matter what you do, the punishment is always to narfle the Garthop. Well, and I thought it was an interesting choice in that scene to, because I feel like they were kind of throwing shit at the wall, but they had those people who were like ribbon dancing or whatever, like floating up and down on those curtains, right? And like taking his gifts and like going up into the air with them. I thought it was just odd, you know?
One of them.
I like that scene a lot.
One of them supposedly was Peter Aykroyd, his brother.
Oh really?
One I couldn't tell which one. And then one of the assistants was the writer, the guy that created the Coneheads.
It felt like that scene was they probably let Thomas ad lib a lot. That's why I kinda liked that scene. It felt like, and they didn't really use much ad libbing from what turned out in the final cut, but it just felt like they let them fucking around and play a little bit in that scene. So that one stuck out to me. I thought it was really funny.
The High Master character was from the original sketch too. Belushi played him.
Nice.
But I noticed like the High Master, his cone was starting to shrivel, the very top of it.
I did notice
kinda
that.
Kind of droops a bit.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I don't know if that was like, you know, what that detail is supposed to mean, that he was, I don't know, that he was...
Cone was shriveled.
He was the oldest one or something?
That reminds me of
when... It's just cold, I swear.
when they're in bed together, and she asks him, like, just build our, like...
Oh, yeah, I love that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, my cone would shrivel, and I would die.
Yeah.
And that scene where he's, like, tells her exactly what she wants to hear, and then the scene where he's... acting as a driving instructor and the woman tries to kiss him and he's immediately like, look, it's natural for you to have feelings for me as your driving instructor, but this is not a, like, immediately sets the boundary. You know, I was like, I feel like if Beldar was a real guy, like Twitter would embrace him as like, you know, Beldar's so wholesome, you know, like,
well, but right after that though, when she's like, but there's wisdom to your eyes or something like that. Like he looks like he's
the sadness in your eyes.
There's a sadness to your eyes.
Yeah. Sadness to your eyes. What's funny is like on the side of that the car is the symbol that was like on their keychain, and they found the keychain later. The cab driver, his cab driver boss, had that keychain, and so he used that same symbol as his business symbol on the side of the car, and that's how they get caught, because apparently Spade comes across like an advertisement for his
business
using that symbol. And I'm like, it's like finding a needle in a haystack, but somehow they did it right. I'm guessing Spade is just like looking through driving instructor ads or through the Jersey City, advertisements or something.
Right.
Back to the Gladiator scene. I read that the writer, the original guy that wrote it, he did not like the Gladiator scene. He didn't want to do it. He wanted to do like more of like getting into like their suburban life. He wanted to do like a neighborhood scene on Urniak. Almost sort of like he wanted to do like a mirror image of their life on Earth, so to show that like there was nothing really different between the two civilizations.
Yeah.
But instead they
feel like
Gladiator scene, so.
Yeah, I feel like they would have had to restructure the movie. I mean, obviously they wouldn't have had enough time for that. I feel like that'd be a great opportunity for a sequel. Though, like, that's something I would want to see, like, them take a lot more time on and investigate, you know?
Yeah. The claymation is great. I love the claymation monster. I mean, this is like some, what is his name? The Clash of the Titans guy.
Yeah.
Something Hausen, right? Hinhausen, Harry Hinhausen or something.
Harryhausen, something.
Something like that. But, yeah, I appreciate it.
Hausen.
It made me think of all the like CGI monsters that we've had to like deal with over the past 20 years, you know.
Yeah.
And this.
Well, and it works. I think especially because this is a comedy. It's not bad, especially for that. It looks a hell of a lot better than the Scorpion King, right? Like 15 years later, or whatever. And I think in a comedy, you're like, okay, yeah, I don't need it to look immaculate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I was looking forward to it, to be honest. I remembered it from being a kid, and I was like, man, it's gonna be fun to see.
And let's give it a ridiculous voice too. Like it doesn't have like a monster's voice, right?
Right.
It sounds like a baby.
Yeah, that's right.
Like when it starts choking on the ball, it's like like I get no respect, you know.
Yeah.
But that was cool. That was exciting when he does line up the ball, the rock with his homemade club.
Yeah,
fired him. It's like, oh, that's like the whole setup is like great because like you just know he's gonna like.
The golf skills.
Yeah.
I thought it was great, and then especially when he like hooks it by the collar as it's choking, and then like pulls it down. You know, I thought that was great. I thought that scene was great.
Yeah,
I bet Aykroyd tells everyone, like, after a few drinks, that Happy Gilmore was his idea. And he told Sandler about it on Coneheads, and he stole it from him.
Okay, so he's a hero, right? Dave Thomas, he's the High Master. He does this whole thing where he's like, oh, yeah, Beldar, he's the great champ. There's this really funny, subtle joke where he was like, let it be written. Then he turns to like one of his like toadies and he's like, are you writing this down? And the guy like taps all of his pockets like he's looking for a pen.
Right.
And then he doesn't write it down and he has like a scared look on his face.
Yeah. When I think it's after that where he's like, no, I'm the supreme leader and nobody listens to me. And that's when Spade like weasels up and he's like, you know, leadership is hard. You know, it's a burden.
Yeah. You know, Spade, I gotta give it to him. He's a survivor. He's got a skill, and he's going to like use it to survive.
Oh yeah, yeah.
even if he's like a little piece of shit.
he'd be one of the guys who would survive in like a terrible apocalypse because he'd find the strongest guy and just like sycophant right on. You know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Whatever you need.
Sometimes you gotta break through the wall of an apartment.
So there's the whole thing where he tricks everyone into thinking that he's gonna conquer Earth, right? But then he spares him and he fakes his own death. Yeah, and then like he, McKean, right? He's going to like let him stay in exchange for his life. He's like, I'm going to give you a green card. But then he says, as long as you can prove to have a skill that no other U.S. citizen has.
Right.
Why is that? Like, how is that the standard?
Yeah. Right.
Skill that no one else has, right? Oh, right. You know what? We didn't even talk about the scene with where he confronts the people on the boat that are trying, like, I'm going to guess, like, maybe Cubans that are trying to get right. This was another, like, one of those scenes we were talking about earlier. Like, they're trying to do an immigration story here. Or trying to shoehorn one in. And, I just thought that was a very interesting scene just to throw into this, like, this comedy, right?
Yeah. We have no more room.
Yeah, we have nowhere room. You know,
no jobs for you here, yeah.
Yeah, you'll just be rooting on us or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, making them, like, the villains and then, like, really hammering it home, I think, was a pretty good idea. Even for this movie that, you know, a lot of critics, like, hated it. Like, Ebert gave it 1.5 stars.
Oh, really?
It has, like, a 35% on Rotten Tomatoes, I guess.
Wow.
But, who cares? It's a funny movie, you know?
Yeah.
I guess I read in the 2010s or, like, a little later, like, much later, actually, in the movie, there seemed to be, like, a new appreciation for it. And it was because of the immigration subtext. People started talking.
Oh, really?
Yeah, people started talking about it in terms of being like, oh, maybe there is like some hidden messages here in Conan's, but they're not really hidden. It's like, if you didn't get the immigration subtext the first time around, I can't help.
Yeah, like smacks you in the face.
Okay, so
it's just the timeline was so disjointed for this movie. I mean, the skits were so much longer ago, and like, you know, it was a completely different generation. It could have been a home run when it came out. I think, it was one of those just later, you know, hitters.
Yeah. Which... Well, and I think, because, you know, I have to wonder, like, how much, god damn it, I keep dropping my fucking phone. But I have to wonder, like, how much the nostalgia factor plays into it, because I remember watching this. But, I mean, I'll go back and revisit things I watched as a kid and enjoy, and I'll be like, oh, no, this is a total piece of shit. Like, this is barely even watchable.
Yes.
Like, I just watched the Coneheads last night, and I was like, that was pretty good. It was, like, pretty funny. The plot was solid. The story was solid. You know, I think it's pretty solid all around, you know?
Yeah, I think it – well, before I get to that, let me just finish a couple other little notes here. So Ronnie shows up for the prom, and then there's this thing where he says, let me have 55 words with you.
And
someone counted that, and it is exactly 55 words that he said.
I didn't count it, but I was sure that it was, yeah.
Yeah.
It was very specific. And then I
thought it was weird that they took the picture.
Yeah.
But like, but you think with alien technology, like, he's a brilliant person. I'm sure they had just great cameras back in whenever this movie takes place, but like, still his camera blasted Ronnie in the
face. Yeah, and they do the sunburn joke again. Yeah,
Hold
back. You think that you think their cones could do everything, that the cones could just take the picture, and it's just like, it's a photographic memory now,
right?
It's the icon.
It's like the USB on the side.
No, they, no, that's funny. I wonder if there's a cut scene earlier with the 55 word thing where someone says, can I have a word with you? And then they say a word and he like walks off.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if there was something cut. And then so like later he was like 55 words. That was hilarious.
So this is the end of the joke or the end of the movie. They drive off to prom and then it shows the moon one more time. The moon's got the chip.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And, like I was going to say, I think the movie does hold up. I don't think it's a movie that I need to watch again. I mean,
watched it twice, too.
I watched it twice, just so I could take all the notes. But yet, it's not as dumb as, like, I think people... there are worse SNL movies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think the cameos were fun.
Yeah.
I didn't remember. I wouldn't have said there were going to be a lot of cameos before going into it. And again, I thought there was way less Farley. I was super excited all the Farley that was
in it. Yeah. Yeah, that was one thing. Like, every 5 minutes, it was like a new, or less. It was like a new person. It was like, holy shit, this person's in this. Holy shit, this person's in this, you know? Mm-hmm. And Brent, you mentioned John Lovitz again a little while ago, but he's somebody for me. He kind of has the same shtick in every movie, right? But I like him in this role. And I actually, the last movie I probably watched before this, a few days ago, I watched A League of Their Own. I showed that to my kids for the first time. I forgot John Lovitz is even in that, but he's got a huge part in the very beginning.
Yeah.
And he's great in it. You know, he just is like total asshole.
It's a great one-off character. I just watched that recently too, last year.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, little I've always Mickey, wanted to man. Go to his theater. He's great in that.
Got apparently like a really rocking, of course, met the current times is kind of weird, but he's got the John Lovitz Theater like in Los Angeles.
Oh, really?
He frequents his own place a lot. I always thought that would be really cool to go see him.
Well, any other notes or things you guys like want to mention or favorite moments? Or we covered all of them?
I like the Chili Peppers song, and it's not on a record. It was like a B-side, which kind of blew a lot of people away that a song of that caliber would have been, because they are all about singles, especially then. Wouldn't have been on a record. It ended up being on a greatest hits or something later, but a lot of people don't. Yeah, it's not. It was ended up being on a greatest record.
It's like one of those things where it's like they wanted a new single and then they put it on a greatest hits. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people do that.
Good song. I like that.
I don't remember the video, but I did read that Farley was in the video.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I guess he has like one scene. He's a truck driver.
Definitely gonna watch that.
I would like to say that it's kind of interesting you chose this movie in during this time because, the government is actually our real life government has come out and said there are UFOs. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're like the Coneheads, man.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah. Right on.
Yeah, you have to remember what the U stands for in UFO, though.
Unidentified. Yeah, it could just be our own. Do you think it's just our own like Air Force stuff that's going on, or another country's Air Force? They've come up with something kind of cool.
I mean, in all seriousness, I think that there could be something that we can't explain, some phenomenon. I don't think it has anything to do with flying. I don't think it has anything to do with I don't know, visitors. There is probably some sort of like interdimensional sort of things going on that we are unaware of, and every once in a while we'll catch it. We'll catch a glimpse of something.
Something we don't understand scientifically.
Yeah, a tear in the dimension.
Right. Yeah. Well, and my grandfather, who's always been like a wild Wait, like when I was a child, so like decades before QAnon, like he was into the shit that eventually I think became QAnon and that whole thing. But you know, he was reading the book "Behold a Pale Horse" when I was a kid, and like all this wild conspiracy shit. But he was telling me, he would always say like in World War II or whatever way back then that flying saucers were the Germans. He was like, yeah, the Germans had flying saucers, and that's what. You know, he always said it was the Germans, but I've since come to realize he was probably pretty full of shit on pretty much everything, but, you know.
The Germans.
They had flying saucers.
I believe it, man. They've got some good engineering quality in that in that crew, for sure.
I mean, they were far ahead in, like, rocket technology.
Yeah, and weaponry. A lot of things they led in. For sure.
I mean, the whole like Operation Paperclip, right? That was all about bringing their scientists over here and, you know, and expunging their Nazi records.
Right.
Yeah. So good place to end Coneheads on is talk about Nazi scientists.
Nazis.
but see, the Nazis could only come over if they could prove they had a skill that no other U.S. citizen had.
Anyway, would you recommend this movie? Like, I mean, if someone was like, I've never seen it, would you want to watch it? Would you watch it again? That's, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I'll jump in. I think my answers to those questions may be different. I think I would definitely recommend somebody watch it. I think it's worth watching. And I might watch it again, but I feel like it'll be a long time before I feel like, hey, I need to watch this movie again, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think my answer is the same. It's great. Like, you get to see some Farley. Dan Aykroyd's amazing, you know? And, yeah, Jane Kirkman's like the bosses of SNL.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely recommend it to someone, yeah. But it holds up, I would say, later. Like, you want to see this again? Like, sometime.
Yeah. So Farley in his like stinky oil-drenched jacket shows up at your door and asks to take your daughter, who is 10 years younger than him, out.
Wrong.
You're saying yes?
Absolutely fucking not.
I'm miserable. I need to take your daughter to prom.
Oh, well, so miserable. Well, in that case.
Have you been drinking?
Yeah. I just got off work.
All things are a no, Ronnie. All things are a no.
Have you been drinking? Yeah, I'm on my lunch break.
Yeah. I'm on my lunch break, ain't I?
Yeah.
No, I think it holds up too, I would say, if someone hadn't seen it in a while, or because again, I had like those memories that I thought of. It's super short. It's like it's not even an hour and a half, I don't think.
Yeah,
like
it's perfect time.
Hour 24 or something.
Yeah, it's perfect time.
So if you don't, I mean, shit, the world people live in now, binging and streaming, an hour and 24 is nothing. So it definitely holds up. Way better than a lot of the stinkers that we're going to watch coming up. Pretty good. I mean, again, I felt bad for any movie that had to follow the Blues Brothers, because that's like a completely different caliber than all the movies that kind of came after Wayne's World and Coneheads that followed these tropes we saw in all the rest of them, good or bad, later, you know, whether they're SNL or Sandler and Mike Myers going to doing their own thing. These were kind of the start of all that, so... Cool to see some of those writers. Cool to know that. Thanks for doing that research, Mike. And knowing that punch up came from those guys, that I love their material. I love all the stuff they had done. So it makes sense that they kind of got us on this one. But I'm in the same camp. I probably won't watch it again for a while.
Yeah. Well, anything else? No.
Thanks for talking about it with this guy.
Thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, oh, it's always a pleasure, man. It's always a blast.
If you guys want to do another one down the road, just let me know. I'll let you guys pick one out.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
Join us. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, later, everyone.
Bye.
See you guys. Bye. I'm so miserable.